one of the biggest frustrations for Christians of any generation is knowing and understanding the will of God for our lives. Out of all the questions been asked over the years in ministry, that probably is number one. Questions like, why am I here? Does God really have a purpose for me? What does he want me to do? In other words, as a Christian, what is it that God really expects from me? You may be asking that or those or similar questions this morning about your own life, your own situation. You may be thinking big picture things like, God, do you really have a purpose for my life? Or questions like my worldview. Do I really believe that the Bible is true and therefore I should interpret all of the physical reality around me through biblical truth? Do I really embrace a biblical worldview? Or it might not be such big issues, so enormous issues, thought-provoking issues. It may be personal issues, issues like family. God, am I supposed to get married? And if so, when and to whom? Issues like, do we have children or not? It could be financial issues that you're facing. Should I rent or should we buy? Should we fix up the old car or get a new one? Should we really honor God with our tithes and offerings? Day-to-day issues, like a young man thinking, should I really ask the girl out? Or maybe an employee thinking, God, is this the day that I should ask my boss for a raise? And the reality is, it doesn't matter the size, the shape, or the sort of any questions or concerns that we have. If we are biblical believers, we want to know the will of God. The will of God is always important to us because we want to follow Him. We don't want to make mistakes that we're going to pay for, because if you sow to the flesh, you will of the flesh reap corruption. We want God's blessing. We want to sow to the Spirit and of the Spirit reap life. So the will of God is vitally important to us if we just knew what it was. If we could just understand it. Just get our mind around it. Now, I have no idea whether these things even exist today or not, but when I was a kid growing up, and we would go to a carnival, every carnival had what was called a house of mirrors. Some of you remember those? You walk in all macho and confident, thinking, this is going to be easy. First turn, you kind of see a crease and know where it is, so you just walk right straight through there, and then the next thing you know, you're surrounded by six Johnnies. They're all walled mirrors. And I walk into one and bump my head and realize, man, I got to feel my way through all of this. And you walk into another wall, and you soon middle part, you think you're lost and you're never going to get out of there. And you start calling your parents' names and your siblings' names, trying to get to find your way out. That's kind of what it feels like. Understanding and knowing the will of God for my life. The purpose of God, the direction that I'm supposed to walk. Well, I have no doubt that you have experienced similar things, similar questions, related anxieties and fears when it comes to finding the will of God for your life. In the past several weeks, we've noted 4 points that David, the king of Israel, former king of Israel, brought out in Psalm 139, verses 1 through 18. And in the testimony of this former king from this passage, we've noted that God, number one, knows me intimately. And then last week, that he created me intentionally. And then this morning, we're going to see that God planned my life individually. If you have any interest whatsoever, please hear me. If you have any interest in knowing the will of God for your life this morning, please tune in. Psalm 139, verse 16, tells us how God planned out our lives individually. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they were all written. What was written? What did God write in his book? The days fashioned for me when as yet there were none of them. Now, there are two truths in this passage we don't want to miss. Truth number one is the plan of God's purpose for my life. And point number two is the purpose of his plan for my life. First, the plan of God's purpose. When the time came in the providence of God, God began to set his plan in motion for you. And in this plan, as God is in heaven making preparation for your creation, God set his plan in motion and did two things. First of all, he formed our bodies. Secondly, he fashioned our days. Now, first, in verses 13 through 15, David talks about God's overall, overarching, providential birth, creation of David. Listen to what he said. We looked at this last week. David said, "You made all the delicate inner parts of my body. You knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous. How well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb." And then in verse 16, he says, "You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed." Now, I ask myself this question. Why is David, again, in verse 16, telling us that God was there at our embryonic state and he create us. Remember last week we talked about David's describing a ball of strands or strings or DNA, and that in that God is rolling out that ball and knitting us together, knitting all of these strands and strings that come from this embryonic ball, knitting them together. So then why is he, in verse 16, why does he then go back to saying, you saw me before I was born? We already knew that. And he writes, every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. David tells us in 13 and 15 that God was there at that embryonic state and knit us together. But then he says again in 16, you saw me before I was born. So what is he doing? David is setting up, he is teaching us a very important timeline here. The sequence, not just what God did, but when he did it. Now, take hold of this. David is saying, even before, this is the time frame, this is the sequence, even before he created us, even before we lived a day, but even before that, before he even created us, he penned in his book our life. The implication is he form-fitted us for his plan. He wrote the plan of our life in his book first, and then he created us. You are perfectly created to accomplish the will of God, the purpose of God, the call of God in your life. Therefore, please hear this, therefore. Therefore, your life is not a mistake. Therefore, you are not some kind of accident. Therefore, your life is not meaningless, and God has not forgotten you. He wrote out the plan for your life before he stitched you together. When God saw you at conception, he fell in love with you. He planned out your life so that you never, ever, ever be ashamed or embarrassed of who God has made you or what he has called you to be. Secondly, he fashioned our days. He didn't just form our bodies, but this leads into he fashioned our days. So how detailed, how involved did God get when he penned our lives into his book? How precise, how detailed did God fashion our days? Did he just write in his book on November the whatever it is today, 2020, I want Johnny to do this and accomplish this on this day? Did he do it that way? Or was it more generalized where he just said, okay, on these days, I'm going to bless him. On these days, he's going to walk through trial. How did God do it? What did he write when he penned your life and mine into his book before he ever knit us together? Well, thankfully, we know the answer to that. In the New Living Translation, Psalm 139, 16b, every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. How involved, how detailed did God get in writing out the plan of your life before he even created you? Every moment, your translation may not have that every moment. It just may say that God laid out our days. But the New Living Translators, now listen closely, were correct in adding every moment that God wrote down. Because of the word day, the Hebrew word day, when he wrote, every day of my life was recorded in your book. The term day in the Hebrew context, the Old Testament context, has to do with a comprehensive and completeness. It has to do with God's control, ultimate, absolute authority over that day. It has to do with an all-embracing, all-inclusive God involved in that day, every day of our lives. So that's why the New Living Translators added that phrase, every moment was recorded. Now, we've heard a lot about the word systemic lately. If you watch telecast, news stories, read on the internet, the word systemic is being used a lot today. The accepted definition of systemic is this. Systemic is related to a system, a policy, or a practice, especially when it affects the entirety of the said system. In other words, systemic means that it is through and through completely and entirely, that what we are identifying is not just an isolated thing, but it's complete. It colors everything. I have an announcement to make. God is systemic in your life. The plan of God he wrote for your life before he even knit you together is systemic. He is all through it. He is complete in it. God's sovereign oversight over our lives is full, complete, all-encompassing, which leads us into the purpose of his plan. The purpose of God's plan for our lives, what is that? You know, there's no doubt that today there is this, we see this addiction to success in Twitter followers, in reality TV, and Instagram influencers. It's just rabid. And, they're probably not any different than any other generation of wanting success. But with the advent of the internet, it just makes it more observable and increases opportunity. But it's human nature to want to know and be known, to want to be admired and respected. And as followers of Jesus, we want to do great things for God. But the problem is that that is not the thrust of this passage. The thrust of this passage is not, you've been created by God, you've been blessed by God, now go out and do godly things. That's not the thrust of the passage. The thrust of the passage is what you and I have both heard for years and years It is each moment of the day. It is a minute by minute dependence and walk with God through the day. Jesus wanted us to understand that when he created, when he wrote our lives' pattern and purpose, that every day says the same thing. You don't have to have this great vision of what God, every day is the same instructions. Follow me. However, let me share this with you. Wendell Berry, who is a Kentucky farmer and writer, wrote a book, a novel called Jabber Crow. And in this novel, his character, Jabber, talks quietly about the work of God's guidance in his life. Let me just read a section of this. Jabber Crow is telling a friend, "Often I have not known where I was going until I was already there. I have had my share of desires and goals, but my life has really come to me, or I have gone to it mainly by way of mistakes and surprises. Often I have received better than I deserved. Often my faintest hopes have rested on bad mistakes. I am an ignorant pilgrim crossing a dark valley, and yet for a long time, looking back, I've been able to shake off that feeling that somehow I've been led." Proverbs 16:9 says, "A man's heart plans his ways, but the Lord directs his steps." Proverbs 3:5-6, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all you do, and he will show you which path to take." Look, I don't know where you are right now, but I know all of us can't be, likely not, are walking in the will of God. But I want you to know, you can be right now. You can be today. Whatever you've done doesn't matter. You bloom right now where you are. If you're willing to let God lead you, live in him, you can do his will with him and live in fullness. And I'm about to tell you right now how to do it. I'm going to tell you right now how to know you're walking in God's will. And I'm going to close with this. Psalm 37:4 tells us how it's done. "Take delight in the Lord," or delight yourself in the Lord, "and God will give you your heart's desires." Key to this passage is the word delight. The origin of the word, now listen, the origin of the word, "delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart." The origin of the word delight means to be soft. It means to be dainty toward another person. Thus, instead of saying be soft to that person or be dainty to that person, they begin to use the word delight as it relates to an individual. Delight yourself with that person. "I am delighted with you," meaning I will treat you softly and carefully and as an exquisite thing and as something very, very precious to me. And the psalmist said, "Delight yourself in the Lord." And you know what he's saying? Here's the key. Treat God better than you treat anyone else in your life. Be soft to him. be kind to him. Look at him. See him as precious to you. And so that when you come to him, you come to him as someone not only that you love, but that you respect and that you honor. And when you treat God better than you do anyone or anything else, he will place into your heart his desires. I mean, you'll be transformed. Try it. Try it. Delight yourself in the Lord. Treat the Father better than you treat anyone else. And watch him transform the desires of your heart that you may walk in his will.
Thank you for joining us for this Highland Sermon from Dr. Johnny Funderburg. If you live in the Clovis, New Mexico area, we would love to have you join us here at Highland one Sunday at 10 a.m. You can find us at 2201 North Main Street in Clovis. Visit highlandclovis.com for more information about our church and follow us on Facebook at hbc.clovis.